Welcome to the LTC University Podcast. My name is Jamie Preston, and today we have somebody who's no stranger to the podcast. We have Dr. Casey Herring. She's a pharmacist, a clinical pharmacist, specifically for SC House Calls in James Island, South Carolina. Casey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and you?
I'm doing well, yeah. It's a beautiful day out. It actually feels like fall this morning. I'm in the opposite end of the state. I'm in Greenville, South Carolina, and actually, be more specific, West Pelzer. And there is a big difference between Pelzer and West Pelzer, apparently. I can't see it, but they have different mayors and everything, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, but it actually feels like fall outside. It's in the high 50s, low 60s this morning, and I got my windows open. It's gorgeous. So, yeah.
Wow, that sounds really nice.
Yeah. Now, you're probably a little warmer in Charleston there.
Yes, it is definitely a little warmer. But, yes, that is nice.
Yeah, it's nice. I love the fall. To me, it's the best time of year. So, well, today we're going to talk about something that is really important to me, you know, as I've actually had this disease. And we're going to be a little more specific, and we're going to talk about diabetes in the elderly and how... You know, as a pharmacist, you guys work with providers and helping them, you know, dial in those medications and everything. So, Casey, talk about why this is so important.
The reason this is so important is because studies have found through the American Diabetes Association and their research have shown that if we tightly control blood sugar and blood pressure in the elderly, it can have negative consequences on their overall health, which is totally opposite of what we would do with somebody that's younger. You know, we want to control their blood sugar tightly and their blood pressure. You know, we have these set goals, and people forget when people age that the guidelines lax up on how tight we need to control blood pressure and blood sugar, because the biggest thing with elderly people that we would like to prevent are falls.
Falls
are associated with dizziness or low blood sugar. Hypoglycemia can cause falls. Low blood pressure can cause falls. And why that's so important is once you're an older person and you break a bone, like a hip, a pelvis, your life expectancy decreases significantly.
Wow.
Yeah. My grandmother, for example, she's battling cancer, and they're like, oh yeah, your colon cancer, you know, you might live a year. Mm-hmm. We're 3 years into this. Yeah. She's 3 years into this.
Right.
And she felt good one day, and she walked down her three little brick steps to her yard to go plant flowers and fell and broke her pelvis.
Wow.
Within 6 months, she passed away.
Yeah.
And you know, my grandmother, you know, to see her tell a physical therapist she wasn't going to do it, I was like, that is not my grandma.
Yeah.
My grandma is so sweet. And it's because, you know, that it just decreases their life expectancy. So there's guidelines in place from the ADA. And I just feel like it's very important because we have a huge older population. Mm-hmm. Just to go over what the guidelines say for A1C targets and why they are, and just a few of the medications in diabetes that you want to try to avoid. Because we want to avoid the ones that literally time you take it can cause hypoglycemia.
Yeah. And in the United States, I mean, the diabetes is an epidemic. I mean, there's so many people with diabetes, type 1, type 2. And I know there's a big difference there, but there's so many people that are dealing with this that everybody knows somebody with diabetes. There's no doubt, whether you know it or not, you know multiple people with diabetes.
They've lowered the A1C level to even classify you as diabetic and pre-diabetes. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, before it was like, if you have an A1C 7 or above, you were diabetic. Well, that number's changed to 6.4. And pre-diabetes is now like even lower. And so it's, you know, as those as those numbers have lowered, we still need to realize that in older people, we do not need to have intense glucose control.
Yeah. Right.
Because older adults with diabetes have higher rates of premature death, functional disability, accelerated muscle loss, and coexisting illnesses such as hypertension, coronary artery disease, and stroke, than older adults that don't have diabetes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, they literally have, can be very complex patients. And, you know, with older people, they're at a greater risk of hypoglycemia already. One reason is insulin deficiency. Another reason is that older adults have higher rates of unidentified cognitive impairment and dementia. And that leads to difficulties in adhering to complex self-care activities, you know, so you don't want them on complex medical insulin regimens. Like, sliding scales are not recommended for the elderly. It's just not. I don't even like mealtime insulin. I mean, I know sometimes we have to do it depending on how uncontrolled their diabetes are, but I prefer a basal insulin if we have to use the insulin.
Yeah.
You know, we want to make it as simple as possible. And cognitive decline itself, just cognitive decline, is associated with increased risk of hypoglycemia.
Yeah. I mean, they're calling, I mean, you hear a lot of people talk about, you know, type 3 diabetes being Alzheimer's.
Yes.
And how that affects, and that's what they're really, that's what they think it is.
Well, here's a great story. I was doing a consult a few days ago, and the son was like, I was like, well, how's your parents' appetite? And they were like, they eat like a horse. I've never seen them eat so much. And that's because they had dementia and they forgot they ate.
Yeah, right.
So even with her like snapping a picture and showing it to them, like, here, you just ate at this time. See this stamp? Still was like, no, I didn't. I'm still hungry. Yeah. And you know, and it is in their mind, but their tummy really is growling because they think they're hungry. And so, you know, and most of the time in dementia, when it gets very progressed, then they don't want to eat. So it was just a balancing cycle.
Sure.
But so there's the main thing is we want to make sure that we do everything we can, to prevent this hypoglycemia. That's the biggest thing we're going to, you know, look at is the hypoglycemia. But I mean, I think that, you know, the biggest thing to think about is what is the problem? What does intensive glucose control in the elderly, like what's the causes of that? What does it do if we intensely control their diabetes? It is linked to increased overall cause and cardiovascular mortality, hypoglycemia, and weight gain.
Yeah.
You know, and that big, the big thing that hits me is all cause.
Yeah.
All cause, not just cardiovascular mortality, but all cause mortality. You know, and that's huge.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want somebody that's older to have premature death because of something that we could have helped or prolonged. You know, it's, you know, the older we get, it's all about the quality of life.
Sure.
You know, and like I tell people when we're doing diabetes counseling, you know, the little 96-year-old wanted a piece of ice, you know, a piece of cake with ice cream on it for her birthday. Please give the little 96-year-old a piece of cake for their, you know, an ice cream for their birthday. You deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you've earned it at 96, but, you know, be smart about it, space it out, you know, space those carbs out throughout the day and just make sure it's just a treat and not an all the time thing. But, you know, we definitely don't want to take away the little pleasures in somebody's life when that's, you know, they're at 96.
Yeah,
they deserve absolutely. That. But it's just mainly like, what can we do as healthcare professionals to help our older population and control their diabetes?
Sure, Absolutely.
So,
now, how much, I know obviously you're a pharmacist, you know, so you understand and utilize medications for these things. How much is diet a factor when, you know, working with these patients?
Diet is a huge factor. So I love to tell people that, you know, I'm not diabetic, but here I share my story. You know, in 2020, COVID comes, I can't do keto anymore because you can't find frozen cauliflower rice. So I gained like 50 pounds back that I lost.
Yeah.
But I ended up having a gastric sleeve. So it ended up leading to something good for me. I'm able to share my recipes, my tricks that I do with my patients. And then the biggest thing I think that we forget to teach people, Jamie, is the difference between mental hunger and physical hunger.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. Physical hunger is that my stomach is growling and I'm so hungry, I feel like my stomach's eating my backbone. Mental hunger is literally cravings. My thing is, I share that with them, and I'm like, look, my husband found this recipe called Perfect Chocolate Cake. It is the best thing in the world. You know, I love it. And it has, you know, it has coconut flour, and it tastes really good. So I share those recipes, and then I remind them, the biggest thing I want you to do is not feel cheated. We can't make this feel like a diet. We need to make it a lifestyle change.
Sure.
So I need you to keep yourself some sugar-free popsicles in the freezer. So when you want something sweet, you have the right tools in your house.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of that now. There's a lot of options out there that are provided.
Yes. I mean, I know it's expensive, and this is the one thing I will splurge on, is I love bagels. There is a website that thinslimfoods.com. My husband found it. They have like a zero carb bagel.
Wow.
It's $8 a loaf, but I have that, you know, because sometimes, you know, we all get sick and don't feel well. And what's the one thing that you can keep down? A piece of cheese toast or a piece of toast. But I don't eat bread. Bread would make my tummy hurt. So, you know, Aldi's a good source. They have low carb tortilla shells. They have their own really keto bread, but you have to be careful when you look at those breads, like in Walmart, that claim to be keto. They still have a lot of carbs in them.
Sure.
You know, and then teaching people that low fat doesn't always mean low carb and doesn't mean it's healthier for you. Ranch dressing is my favorite example. I love Hidden Valley Ranch. And the regular Hidden Valley Ranch has 2 carbs. The fat-free has 5 or 6.
Wow.
So it's better to eat the regular, you know, ranch dressing. So I tell people, if you like ranch, eat ranch as your dipping sauce. Here's what you need to do. But the one thing that I feel like I really need to cover is that, what are the treatment goals in our elderly patients?
Sure.
What A1C are we aiming for? So if it's a healthy, if it's an older adult who's otherwise healthy, doesn't have a lot of coexisting chronic illnesses, and their cognitive function is intact, and they have good functional status, they should have lower glycemic goals than other elderly people. So that means we're still going to aim for less than 7 to 7.5.
Yeah,
I prefer to lean towards 7.5 because I just do not want hypoglycemia in a fall. So then what's going to be our A1C for elderly who have multiple comorbidities? They have functional and cognitive status decline, and then based on their living situation, which we don't really think about. Like, do they have to have a caregiver present all the time, or are they in a long-term care facility?
Sure.
Those patients, we aim for 8 to 8.5.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't realize that. We're not, you know, we got to base it on what their like, if you have 2 or more chronic illnesses, you're going to fall in the category that needs to be 8 to 8.5.
Sure.
Not 7 to 7.5. And that's where I think we start treating. And the biggest thing the ADD has identified in elderly is we tend to over-treat diabetes in elderly.
Yeah. Wow.
And that was very eye-opening for me as a pharmacist to see that we're over-treating. So the biggest thing is we do not want episodes of hypoglycemia, but how do we control their blood sugars? What are things we should start with? Metformin is my go-to. I love it. It's the best drug. It has all these amazing studies. It's old. We know it's safe. We do know it causes GI upset, but if we explain that that'll last 2 weeks to a month, but then it's gone. And if you actually prescribe the extended release, it has a different coating. Mm-hmm. And the extended release can be taken twice a day, or you can take it all at once. It has a coating that causes less GI upset. So I recommend just putting everybody on the XR.
Yeah.
But metformin does not cause hypoglycemia. It doesn't bottom out your blood sugar.
Right.
But there is a class of medications, the sulfonylureas, the glipizide, the glucotrol, the glipiramide. That class is notorious for causing hypoglycemia.
Mm-hmm.
It even carries an indication, I mean, a warning.
Causes the falls.
Yes. Hypoglycemia, because you get dizzy and what happens? You fall.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, it even mentions everywhere, sulfonylureas are associated with a greater risk of hypoglycemia than other non-insulin diabetic agents.
Right.
So, you know, we really, really, really want to be careful about having our elderly patients on it. And Medicare has done somewhat of a good job of trying to help combat that, because you'll notice sometimes glyburide or glipiramide won't be covered by a Medicare D plan.
Mm.
Glipizide will, I don't like to give glipizide to elderly because it's a sulfonylurea, but it doesn't cause as much, it's not the bigger one. The glipiramide and the glucotrol are the ones that are the worst about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, I like to leave Actos off everybody. We know it has cardiovascular risk associated with it. So I just prefer not to use that medicine with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely have to make sure it's avoided in heart failure patients. And we get heart failure patients with it. It can exacerbate your heart failure.
Sure.
So we have to look at the patient's overall picture. And the one thing the American Diabetes do with their guidelines is they make sure they reiterate multiple times that care needs to be individualized.
Sure.
I had a lady, one of the nurse practitioners called, and she's like, she's 99. Do I really have to start a diabetes medication? Her A1C is 9. And I said, no, please don't.
Mm-hmm.
I said, let's just continue to watch, encourage good lifestyle modifications. I said, I know 8.5 is what they say is the high, but at 9, I said, she's 99.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I feel like we'll have more complications if we lower it too much. And then two, what we forget is that, you know, when people start losing their memory, and a lot of people don't want to admit it. So we have a lot of unidentified or undiagnosed cognitive impairment among our older population.
Sure.
When we make their treatment plans complicated, like you have to test your blood sugar 3 or 4 times a day, you got to give yourself insulin 3 to 4 times a day, and you got to take these pills this many times a day. No, that opens the door for medication non-adherence.
Mm-hmm.
And we want people to be compliant. So we need to simplify these medication regimens.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, honestly, I don't think that should be just for the elderly.
No, I don't either. I really think we should make people's medication regimen as easy as possible.
Yeah. It's easy to forget. Oh, did I take that? You know, it's so easy to forget, even if you're not elderly.
Exactly. I have that same problem myself. I'm like, oh, did I take this today? Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. I can't remember because I don't remember what happened earlier in the day.
Yeah.
So these are the things that we want, you know, to look at. So we have to also remember that drugs like sulfonylureas, when given with insulin, causes an even greater risk of hypoglycemia.
Sure.
So our biggest thing is just to make sure we have individualized their A1C target and that we know what we're aiming for. And we're looking at the American Diabetes guidelines, they spell it out. There's even a chart that if you have like chronic kidney disease, hypertension, Therefore, you're going to fall in the category of 8 to 8.5, but they have a huge chart. They have it spelled out so easily, and it's its own separate guidelines, and it's treatment of diabetes in older adults. And so, just that biggest thing about the over-treatment, we don't want to over-treat anybody.
Absolutely.
We know
Absolutely.
how much medicine costs. We know how much, healthcare overall in general costs. So there is a slippery slope. Just like it's recommended that people with diabetes that they be on an ACE or an ARB. That's a blood pressure medicine, regardless of their blood pressure, for kidney protection. So if your patient, sometimes in the elderly, we have to stop that because they have a tendency for their blood pressure to run low. You can continue an ACE and an ARB even with chronic kidney disease. I think some people forget that and they'll say, "Oh, their kidney function." No, you need a 30% bump in creatinine before you even consider stopping an ACE or an ARB because it has that kidney protection. And the thing about that is the main thing that you're gonna the reason you would stop our ACE or ARB is due to a potassium level. And then the other thing we need to remember is statins. Statins are recommended in diabetic patients, regardless of their cholesterol levels, because it gives heart protection. But the one thing I do recommend is if their cholesterol levels are at goal and they are 85, and we're looking at 10-year life expectancy here. Do they need the statin anymore? No. I have a 99-year-old. I was talking to the daughter last month about, and she's like, "Yeah." And she held it, and when we did a follow-up, she's like, "I've been holding it. She's been doing good. Cholesterol levels came back. Her bad cholesterol was a little high, but we wanted less than 100. Hers was like 116. Am I worried about that at 99? No. Continue not taking that statin. I don't want her to get muscle pain. So those are the things we look at. And then the last thing I really wanted to touch on was Farxiga. Farxiga is one of my favorite diabetes drugs because it has other indications. I love a drug that you can take and you don't even have to have diabetes, and it literally has the best indications. It is my go-to. I think that especially with people with diabetes and heart failure,
And what's
you should
this?
be on there.
What does the drug do?
Farxiga, it helps with heart failure. Hey, I have non-diabetic patients that have heart failure on Farxiga. It has an indication for diabetes. It has an indication for heart failure without diabetes. And then, Jamie, it just got a new indication for chronic kidney disease.
So
So
it's really combats a lot of stuff there.
it does, and you don't have to have diabetes. You can have chronic kidney disease and be on Farxiga and no diabetes. You can have heart failure and be on Farxiga and not have diabetes. And then it's a diabetic drug. So, that was a new indication that just came out that it's been approved for heart failure, but the new indication was chronic kidney disease. And I just wanted to briefly mention that because I know it's new. And that's just looking at things and realizing they have other indications. And they're not off-labeled indications. These are the indications approved by the FDA. So we're not using off-label reasons to treat. And that's just a good drug to know. And other drugs in the same class as Farxiga also can help with heart failure, like Jardiance. But I prefer heart failure, Farxiga and heart failure because it was the first one to have the indication and because it has that chronic kidney disease indication too. And people with more comorbidities have a tendency to have chronic kidney disease before somebody that doesn't have the comorbidities. And we
Absolutely.
just need to make sure that we know the guidelines and that we have them on the proper stuff. Like my dad was diagnosed in his 40s with a A1C of 7 of diabetes. So never been over 7. He was automatically put on lisinopril and simvastatin because his doctor is amazing. Like his doctor is one of the reasons, like I'm like, oh yeah, I knew these guidelines before even starting pharmacy school because he uses them. And that was just so eye-opening to me. I was so happy that somebody in the doctor in my little small hometown was just so great, up to date on all the guidelines and use them in practice.
Wow.
Because knowing them is one thing, but using them in practice is another. And my dad's never had high cholesterol. He's never had high blood pressure, but he's on them for kidney protection and heart protection. And that's huge, is to realize we need to protect all our organs, because people forget that the greediest organ in your body, your kidneys. Your kidneys are what, that's why kidney disease and cardiovascular disease go together. Like, your kidneys want to pull all the blood. They're greedy. They are
Right.
greedy little organs. So that's why, you get an infection, you get sepsis, or you go to the hospital, the first thing everybody's going to have is most people get an acute kidney injury, and it recovers when the infection clears. But so we want to protect the kidneys, because we do not want these greedy little organs to try to hoard all your blood.
Sure.
So just making sure we understand the treatment guidelines, what medications should be used, shouldn't be used, because you got to look at all of the person's comorbidities. You want to have them on the simplest regimen possible. And then you want to make sure that the medication regimen is just not too difficult, or that we're not over-treating, because we're aiming for different goals. And that's the biggest thing. We're aiming for different goals with our elderly patients.
Sure, absolutely.
And understanding that those A1Cs, yes, they're guidelines, but guidelines aren't set in stone. That we need to make sure we're using an individualized approach to treating any disease state in any patient.
Absolutely.
And meeting people where they are. We don't have to fix their A1C in the first 3 months. As long as we're lowering it and we're preventing some of the complications, remember, just sometimes you have to meet your patient where they are, and you might have to hold their hand and walk them through it. I do that a lot. I don't mind, because I know that if I want them to have overall change their lifestyle, overall change their mindset on a disease state or a medication, that I need to meet them where they are and then help them get to where they need to be.
Yeah,
And if
absolutely.
we approach medicine that way, I feel like we would be more successful in preventing hospitalizations, more better at preventing complications from disease states. And I feel like that's the one thing that we need to remember: individualize it. Meet a person where they are.
Yeah.
We're not going to get somebody to quit smoking overnight, but hey, if they go from a pack to now they're smoking 5 cigarettes, if you don't think I'm going to be cheering for them on the phone, I am. And
Yeah.
then once they tell me they quit, oh my, I might even try to sing them something and hurt their ears. But I'm going to encourage, encourage, encourage. And then, especially what people need to realize with diabetic diet, you have to meet people where they are. You need to
Yeah.
make small changes first.
Right.
Some people have never had to deal with weight issues. They don't know what it's like. You can say portion control all day, and I'm telling you that if I go on a diet and you tell me I can only have 1,000 calories and I'm used to eating like 3,000, I'm going to starve to death and I'm not going to last long.
Yeah.
People are going to feel that, because we put too much on them. We overwhelm them. They feel starving. So what I do is I try to encourage, let's start with one thing. If you drink soda, let's cut that out first, because I find drink is the hardest thing to change.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can give you substitutes for sugar. I can give you substitute for chocolate. Dark chocolate's better. Have a little piece of that every now and then. But it's mainly meeting people where they are and then helping them know that it's not got to be today, but this is a journey, and we're gonna walk it together. I'm gonna be here with you, and we're gonna get there.
Yeah,
But we
absolutely.
to set somebody up for success, we have to set them up that way. We need to make sure we understand their understanding of a diet, and not call it a diet, call it lifestyle changes. Here's how we need to approach eating. Here's how you need to look at labels.
Yeah.
I go by net carbs. I know a lot of people don't. So I make sure that I try to explain that. You know, when you're looking on that package and it says carbohydrates, no, does it say how much fiber's in it? You can minus the fiber.
Right.
Does it have any alcohol sugars? You can minus those, and then you get your net carbs.
Right.
You know, because we're more worried about those bad carbs. So I like, you know, and this is how we're going to approach diet. I did a 3-hour diabetes consult one time, and it was mainly on diet.
Yeah.
And I have been with her on her journey as she's now in the process of having bariatric surgery. I'm here to support her, share my story. And that's what I feel like is my approach to healthcare. I want my patients to feel comfortable with me. And I feel like the biggest way to earn their trust is to share part of me with them. This isn't a one-sided thing, you know, and I know some healthcare professionals don't do that. They're like, it's not about me, it's about you. No, I want them to know I have a naked little kitty cat. I have a little sphinx that's wrinkly, and I have two furry kitty cats because they're my babies. And that my husband's amazing, and he's a great cook, and I don't know how to boil water, you know. So I want them to know that, hey, look, I don't have diabetes, but I've struggled with my weight since I tore my ACL when I was 20. And I've been big, I've been little, I've been everywhere. I want people to just know that they're not alone in their journey for better health, and that I will be here to support them, cheer at with them, and not necessarily fuss at them, but try to point and lead them in the right direction. I
Absolutely.
don't want them to feel like I'm lecturing, or you know, not listening, because we
It's
all fall
empathy.
short all the time. None of us are perfect. And
Absolutely.
making sure we meet them where they are and help them succeed is
Absolutely.
our biggest goal.
That's
But that's
great.
why I wanted to cover treatment of diabetes in the elderly. It's just because their treatment goals are going to be different, and the way we approach their treatment plan and what medications we choose for diabetes is different. And we need to make sure that we are not dropping that blood sugar too low.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than when your sugar goes too low. It's I don't know I've never you know when I had diabetes before surgery, I never knew when my diabetes was high. But man, if it goes low, you really know it. And it's the worst
Before my
feeling ever.
surgery, how crazy is this, Jamie? Before my surgery, I've never had diabetes, but I had hypoglycemia, which fed my chronic migraines. So even
Absolutely.
now, when I get a headache, a migraine, I have to remind myself, Casey, you don't need to go eat, because it's mental, because in my brain, it associates migraine with low blood sugar. So I still struggle with mental health, mental hunger too. You know, people don't understand that. Like, it's a real thing. And we're two years out, about 2 years out, Jamie. And I still catch myself like bored eating. I'm like, I'm not even hungry. Why did I come in here to pick this up? Like, and I put it right back down. I'm like, oh my gosh, that is just habit. So that's the thing I want people to know is like, how can we help them? We need to first remember that we got to meet people where they are. And some people are just going to require you to hold their hand and walk as slow as they need and help them through it. Because if you really want them to do well, you just are going to have to meet them where they are
That's
and
it.
make sure you make slow changes and not overwhelm somebody. And I
That's
think we
right.
forget about that because we're so honed in on making sure they're on the right guideline-directed medications and they're on the right, we're doing everything by the guidelines. But then we just need to realize it's individualized. And some people we can get there overnight. Other people, it might be a year. But as long as we're making progress and we're doing things to prevent the progression of a disease state, we're doing the right thing.
Absolutely. Casey, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time, and we really appreciate the knowledge, and and that's I think for providers, this is a great reminder, meeting people where they're at, and definitely treating those diabetes patients differently, and if when they're in their later years. So, Casey, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, you know, I'll absolutely love it. So anytime, I would love to come back. I mean, if I could figure out how to be a pharmacist and a podcaster, because I can't leave my patients because I love them too much. I would, because I just love podcasts. Yeah, I'm the person that, like, literally when I'm charting at night in my bedroom has a podcast on.
Yep, absolutely. That's awesome.
People watch TV, I listen to podcasts. That's all right. Of them.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, yes. Casey, thanks
so
much.
Thank you for having me. Right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And if you could leave us a 5-star review, we would really appreciate it. Visit our podcast website at ltcuniversitypodcast.com. You can also subscribe to one of our other podcasts in our podcast network, The Disruptive Podcast with Scott Middleton, Experiencing Healthcare with Matt Staub, and The Thriving Practitioner Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week with a new episode. Have a great week.